Welcome all. Thank you for coming to the celebration of life of a truly remarkable man, a man considered to be one of the 25 most influential Junoites ever. I'd like to express the family's appreciation to Governor Sean Parnell, Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell, and Governor Bill Sheffield for being here today to honor Mayor Bill. It's fitting that we honor Mayor Bill in Centennial Hall. He was mayor when the assembly approved its construction. The first event was Governor Sheffield's inauguration in 1983, and Bill officiated at the ribbon-cutting ceremony on June 11, 1983. John Pugh, Chancellor of the University of Alaska Southeast, will give the invocation.
Let us pray. O God, who creates, sustains, and renews in times of both joy and sorrow, help us to focus now on your presence that will guide us in our time together. Gather us here as one people as we remember and celebrate the life of Bill Overstreet. We are grateful for the countless contributions he made to our community and to our state, and we who assemble here today recognize that we are the beneficiaries of his lifetime of service. We give thanks for all that he was by nature and grace, and for all that he gave to and received from those who loved him. Knowing Bill has enriched each and every one of us, and the many memories of him bring us comfort. We ask you, O God, to abide with Jean and with her family, and also with all who are here to celebrate his lifetime of achievements, that your love will sustain us now and throughout the days ahead. May we find strength in you and fellowship with one another. Amen.
Please stand for Alaska's flag song.
Eight stars of gold on a field of blue, Alaska's flag, may it mean to you. The blue of the sea, the evening sky, the mountain lakes, and the flowers nearby. The gold of the early sourdough's dream, the precious gold of the hills and streams, the brilliant stars in the northern sky, the Bear, the Dipper, and shining high, the great North Star with its steady light, o'er land and sea, a beacon bright. Alaska's flag to Alaskans dear, the simple flag of a last frontier.
And that was the beautiful voice of former mayor of Juneau, Sally Smith. And now, many thanks to Governor Sean Parnell for being here today. Governor Parnell will read from Matthew. Please be seated.
The simple flag of a last frontier, and we're here to celebrate the life of a wonderful man who gave much to this last frontier. And so our condolences go out to Eugene and to your family, and just know that we celebrate the man that Bill was and is today, and we give thanks for him too. Here a reading from the Gospel of Matthew, from Matthew 25, verses 31 to 40. A selection that I have heard a number of times, but when I read it this time, I wasn't sure I understood, and I had to read it multiple times until I began to see the heart of this particular passage, as perhaps Bill's heart too. Matthew 25:31 to 40. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" And the king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now, a very special message from Juneau's Mayor Merrill Sanford.
Thank you, Jim. Good evening, family members. Bill would appreciate that it took five ladies up in the mayor's office 2 weeks to get this thing cut down and back to a legal-sized document. I'd like to read a proclamation from the city and borough. The Office of the Mayor, City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, Mayoral Proclamation. Whereas William Bill Dean Overstreet Sr. was born May 1, 1926 in Winoka, Oklahoma, to Henry Harrison and Mary Ellen, and grew up in Winoka along with his five siblings. And whereas in November 1942, 6 weeks into his junior year, Bill dropped out of high school and enlisted in the United States Navy. And after boot camp, Bill was assigned to the USS Portland, whose first mission after he boarded was the Aleutian Islands campaign. From there, it was off to the South Pacific for a number of major battles. And whereas after his discharge from the Navy in 1946, Bill returned to Winoka, where he attained a GED and enrolled at Northwestern Oklahoma State University. And whereas, on May 15, 1947, Gene Perry said yes to Bill, and they were united in marriage. They were blessed with a son, William Jr., and stayed in Winoka until Bill received his degree. And whereas, in 1952, the family moved to Juneau, and Bill secured a teaching position as an eighth grade teacher at Capital School. He spent his summers commercial fishing until returning to college for additional education. Bill received his master's from the University of Washington. And whereas Bill returned to the Juneau School District as the Capital School principal and in 1964 was promoted to superintendent of schools. During his time as superintendent, he took a sabbatical to study the community school program at Wayne State University. Upon returning to Juneau, he started the community education program, which is still growing strong today. And whereas in 1972, Bill became executive director of the newly established Association of Alaska School Boards. He served on education boards both locally and nationally, and received the National Community Education Award for best exemplifying the community education philosophy of his profession and outstanding graduate award from Northwestern Oklahoma State University. And whereas, after retiring from the education field, he wasn't done yet, Bill was elected to the assembly for the city and borough of Juneau. The fear of losing Juneau as the capital city prompted Bill to run for mayor. He was elected to three mayoral terms, and whereas during the capital move campaign, Bill traveled from one end of Alaska to the other and spoke of the importance of keeping the capital in Juneau. On three occasions, he debated both Atwood about the folly of spending funds for a new capital when there were so many basic needs facing Alaskan communities, such as roads, schools, water, and sewer. And whereas, while traveling around the state, Bill heard a lot of criticism about Juneau being on the same time zone as Seattle and not on the same time zone as other Alaskan cities. His efforts to change Alaska's time zones to put Juneau and Anchorage on the same time zone prompted a recall election, which he won. And whereas Bill took the lead in modernizing Juneau and making it a more welcoming city, the rehabilitation of South Franklin Street took place on his watch. He pushed for utilities to be buried and broad new sidewalks to be installed along downtown. And the flags of the 50 states along Egan Drive, welcoming locals and visitors each summer, even today, was an idea that came out of a visit he made to Switzerland. And whereas, while mayor, Bill served as president of the Alaska Congress of Mayors for two terms. He received the Juneau Chamber of Commerce Citizen of the Year Award in 1982 and an honorary doctorate from the University of Alaska Southeast in 1985. And whereas, after leaving city government, Bill was promoted trade representative for the state of Alaska for the Pacific Rim, stationed in Tokyo, Japan, and promoted trade with Alaska throughout Southeast Asia. And whereas, upon returning to Alaska, Bill worked to help elect Walter J. Hickel as governor, he finished his working career as deputy chief of staff for Governor Hickel. And whereas, the last several years of his life, Bill spent promoting the Whale Project. He felt this bronze sculpture of a humpback whale breaching from an infinity pool along the waterfront would be a landmark for Juneau. And whereas Bill was deeply humbled and extremely honored to have been identified by the Juneau Empire as one of the 25 people who had made the greatest impact on Juneau in the history of the town. Now, therefore, I, Merrill Sanford, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby recognize and celebrate in memoriam that humble and exceptional champion of Juneau, William Dean Overstreet, Sr., in witness whereof I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, to be affixed this 8th day of July, 2013. Merrill Sanford, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. And now we're about to hear the wonderful singing voice of Steve Hamilton singing one of Bill's favorite songs. Steve is accompanied by Bobby Reynolds.
The nights are long since you went away. About you all through the day, my buddy, nobody quite so true. I miss your voice, the touch of your hand. since you went away, I think about you all through the day. My buddy, my buddy, nobody quite so true. I miss your voice, the touch of your hand. That you'll understand, my buddy, my buddy, your buddy misses you, your buddy misses.
Everyone knows that Bill Overstreet had a wonderful sense of humor and a very sharp wit. I remember telling him one time how proud I was of my daughter for learning how to speak Japanese. And he said, you know, Clark, if it wasn't for me and some of my friends from the Pacific, we'd all be speaking Japanese. Right now, we're going to hear stories from various phases of Bill's life by those who know him best. And we're going to start with Roger Grummet, who was in Bill's eighth grade class. Roger?
Thank you, Jim. And I've heard that story before many, many times. Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Bill Jr., for asking me to speak. It was a pleasure. Mr. Overstreet, that's the way we used to call him, and it's always seemed disrespectful to me to call him anything else. In 1955, the Juneau School and the Douglas School Districts consolidated, and all the eighth grade students were to spend that year at Mount Jumbo School in Douglas as a way of extending a sort of olive branch to the fine people of Douglas. The five classes were to occupy the top floor of the school with Mr. Overstreet as one of our teachers. I asked the students of my eighth grade class to send me some comments with regard to their impressions with Mr. Overstreet. I think collectively they will show some of the insight about Mr. Overstreet's teaching for one group of the many he taught. First one is from former student Colleen Pearson. She wrote, Mr. Overstreet was one of my favorite teachers of all time. Maybe I should stop right there. I remember well a dartboard he placed in the classroom wall with circles on it. A tiny circle in the middle was marked sunshine. The surrounding circle was marked overcast. The third was marked rain and snow. Each day a student would throw a dart at the board. Can you imagine that? In the school. And where it landed was our day's forecast. We kept a record of the official weather forecaster's predictions for each day. To our dartboard forecast was far closer to the real weather conditions. Later, when I was teaching in Wrangell, Mr. Overstreet traveled with the State Department of Education. He came to visit my class, which was very sweet of him. I love that man. The second one comes from Lynn Soley. After being totally disappointed about having to travel all the way to Douglas for eighth grade, I was prepared to face yet another disappointment when I realized my teacher would be. All the girls were hoping to get that handsome young Mr. Hirsch. I was stuck with Mr. Overstreet. I'm quite sure that it only lasted a week or possibly two before I was totally, completely thrilled I had the teacher I did. He was calm, understanding and patient. He even made me forget the first disappointment about being bused to Douglas. I continue to be thankful for the influence in my life. My friend Dave Spurl wrote, Mr. Overstreet challenged us. We had good spellers. He told us that if the whole class got 100% on a weekly spelling test, he would supply sodas. We got the 100% and he came through with the sodas. Larry Matthews wrote, "Mr. Overstreet was my teacher, and I always remember him as firm but kind. He always treated us as people, not objects to teach. A man of dignity, patience, kindness, integrity, honesty, he earned the people's respect by the way he treated them. He was always Mr. Overstreet to me. Now, as for me, Mr. Overstreet was not my homeroom teacher, but he taught our room a health class. And I'm sorry to say, I really don't remember much about that class, other than maybe the rule of washing your hands. However, Mr. Overstreet was the coach of my eighth grade basketball team called the Vampires. And I, to this day, don't know who came up with that name. His instructions, we didn't have much of a playbook. His instructions were to get the ball to either Eric McDowell or Bob Beerley and then get out of the way. You can imagine the esteem he earned in our eyes when he was able to schedule us to play a preliminary game at the Juno Douglas High School gym before the mighty Crimson Bears varsity game. And I still remember that game. Our lives did not cross again for about 20 years when I was to know him as an adult. I got to enjoy playing golf with him and to listen to his amusing, well-told stories and his well-informed take on the issues of the day. I think I became a better person by observing Mr. Overstreet and the way he treated people, by watching his dedication to Juneau, the state of Alaska, and any project he was involved with. His energy was infectious, and he was respected by everyone. That's why he was, will, and always will be Mr. Overstreet to me. Thank you.
Now Ken Kelch will talk about Bill as a school district administrator.
When Gene Overstreet asked me to speak as a teacher who worked with Bill, my first thought was, what a great honor. Gene gave me free range of topic and time. My next thought, however, was, Bill Overstreet is still giving me homework. But then I thought of the free microphone and the carte blanche time limits. Well, all that changed Wednesday when Jim Clark gathered us together and lined out the service complete with visual aids, seating charts, rotation schedules of speakers, the amount of time each of us had to speak. Really, Clark was acting like he must have been a chief of staff or something at one time. So today, with less than left, you'll get the abbreviated Cliff Notes version of my homework. Roger Grummet and I left the meeting at the same time Wednesday. Roger was actually happy about the limited speaking time. Roger's wife, Carlene, had only written him 5 minutes of speech material anyway. Okay, maybe that's not true. Maybe you wrote it yourself, Roger. But like Carlene never wrote you a paper in high school. As Roger and I walked, we talked about who was older, Roger or myself, which is I guess that's what you do when you get to our age. And it turned out that Roger was older. But as Roger pointed out, we don't have to feel badly about our age. The really old speakers, has everybody got a program? The really old speakers today follow after J. Allen McKinnon plays the Navy hymn. It's okay, they can't hear us. My first interaction with Bill Overstreet was very impersonal. It began with a telegram that arrived in Michigan. Offer, junior high language arts salary, $8,030. Stop. Acceptance or stop. Rejection by March 26, 1968. Stop. W.D. Overstreet, Superintendent of Schools. Less than 20 words from Bill Overstreet that changed our lives forever, as it did countless other teachers hired for the general school system. When we arrived in Juneau in the June of 1968, the first thing we did was to check in at the school central office, even though it was a Saturday. No one was in the reception area, but Bill Overstreet came out of his office and greeted both Marion and I by name. That was so impressive. I learned years later that Bill always had a large picture board of new staff built every year and it hung directly across from his desk. But a lesson I also quickly learned from this and countless other meetings with Bill in the school system was that Bill Overstreet always methodically prepared for his job. Bill Overstreet did his homework. And he went from impersonal to personal in a nanosecond. Marion and I settled into daily life and social life in Juneau. The new teacher greeting committee of Vi Shaw, Vera Gasway, and Laverne Bruce had found us a great apartment to rent in town on Evergreen Avenue above the cemetery. Immediate neighbors were Dr. and Grace Akiyama, Bill and Maxine Race, Shell and B. Simmons. The Overstreets lived over the hill on Highland Drive. In the first few years in the school district, Mary Borthwick, Roger Walling, and I became negotiators for the teachers' union with the school board. Interestingly enough, the superintendent then served as the go-to mediator between the teachers and the school board, and Bill played that role to the hilt. He actually scared me a couple times in the negotiation process of what he knew about teachers' day-to-day work and lives. Bill Overstreet did his homework. As part of our budding social life, Marion and I went to a potluck with a group of friends that were working for the legislature. And after food and conversation, to our surprise, the pot portion of the potluck broke out. As the pipes were lit and passed around the circle of friends, paranoia set in even before it reached us. Neither of us had smoked pot. We didn't know that there could eventually be a Bill Clinton defense of, I smoked it, but I didn't inhale it. We did know that pot wasn't smoked at teacher gathering, and it was rumored that a general teacher had been fired for smoking it. We passed the pipe quickly without participating and soon excused ourselves. Correcting homework suddenly became a pressing issue. I know that sometimes people become paranoid after smoking pot, but I didn't know you could become paranoid as pot was passing by you. I worried about that situation a lot that evening and was still mulling it over as I walked to school down Highland Drive when Bill was coming out of his house, saw me, and asked me if I wanted to ride to work. If I wasn't paranoid enough, here I am totally not sure if I should have been at a dinner party where marijuana was the main course, and now I'm getting a ride to the school with the superintendent of schools who just happens to be Bill Overstreet, Mr. Amundson. To this day, I have no memory of what we talked about in those few blocks of school, except I remember that feeling how relieved I was when we arrived. Relieved until I was getting out of the car. Bill said, Mr. Kelch, I'd like to see you at 3:30 in my office today. I knew my teaching career was over. How can you get fired for just being at a pot gathering? Wouldn't that just be bad pot luck? But it turned out the meeting was to see if I was interested in becoming a community school director. Bill was a strong advocate of opening the school facilities for community usage. Bill did his homework on the community school concept in Michigan and was instrumental in introducing community schools not only to Juneau but also statewide. I told him that Marion and I were hoping to take a leave of absence next year to travel in Europe and study the teaching of English in foreign school systems. Well, it sounded good. He readily supported our leave of absence and we traveled for 1 year. By 1989, Bill was gone several years from the school system when I directed Oklahoma at JDHS. I received a communication from him. Ken, after many years of directing struggling musicals, in directing Oklahoma, you have finally found a musical of great worth. He didn't have to mention that he grew up in Oklahoma. He quoted the lyrics, Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain. We know we belong to the land, and the land we belong to is grand. And then he thanked me for bringing the Grand Musical Oklahoma to Juneau. Bill's adopted state of Alaska also turned out to be grand for him. It may not have the wind whistling down the plain or waving wheat, but as former Mayor Sally Smith sang, it had blue seas and evening skies and mountain lakes with flowers nearby. It had northern lights and brilliant stars, gold of early sourdough dreams, and precious gold of hill and streams. It also had Bill Overstreet. Bill's Overstreet's generation, let me back up. As the superintendent, Bill Overstreet was innovative, personable, supportive of his staff's goals, and proud of his district's achievement. He took on every assignment from Navy man to superintendent to mayor with dedication and total focus. He also did his homework for the state of Alaska and the community of Juneau that he loved. Bill Overstreet's generation was not called the greatest generation by accident. It was called the greatest generation because of people like Bill, who believed service to country and community was the greatest honor. Bill Overstreet leaves Juneau many legacies, and in Bill Overstreet fashion, he also left us with a whale of a homework assignment to get finished. Thank you for your service, Bill and Jean. Marion and I are honored to be here today.
Thank you, Ken. That was terrific. You are quite right. Bill Overstreet did his homework. At one occasion, he was deputy chief of staff to Governor Hickel, as has been reported. And in expectation of a State of the State speech by Governor Hickel that included concern about the predation of the spruce bark beetle on timber in South Central, Bill had the Forest Service provide him 5 dead beetles in a glass container. And he left the container on the governor's chair where Bill knew he'd find it when the governor returned from his speech. The container included a note that said, 5 dead spruce bark beetles. When the governor returned from the speech and found the container, he asked Bill, what about this? What's this all about? And Bill said, you know, the rest of the staff is talking about problems with the spruce bark beetle. I've actually done something about it. Now we'll hear from Jerry Jones about what it was like to be a friend of Bill's. Jerry?
Well, it's an honor to be here to talk about Bill. A wise man once said, the most a person can say about this life is, I was here and I mattered. Well, Bill Overstreet was here and he mattered. Bill and I often talked about things that he had done and things that had happened to him, and these are a few of the things I remember him telling me. He was a laborer during a summer in the late 1950s, pushing a wheelbarrow full of concrete up a plank ramp, building the new Harborview School. He quit after one day when he heard about the stream guard job. He was a stream guard at Chilcat Lake, so enthusiastic about the importance of his job, he arrested a hometown hero for encroachment. It caused quite a stir. He was a commercial fisherman of some renown in his 35-foot troller, the Seahawk, around Soapstone and Homeshore. A school teacher and basketball coach of unparalleled first-year accomplishments. I understand that trophy is still in the school. He was the superintendent of all schools of Alaska, who, some 20 years later, needing prior experience in school construction to get the job, replied simply, yes, I worked hard to get the Harborview School complete. He was the mayor of the capital city of Alaska. He's the sole representative of Alaska to the nation of Japan, promoting the benefits between those two countries. A ranking state advisor to the governor on all matters involving this great state of Alaska. Yeah, he was here and he mattered. Bill was an Okie, born in Winoka, Oklahoma. where he became familiar with and knowledgeable about railroads. He knew a lot about trains. He dropped out of high school and joined the Navy at 16 years of age, doing the whole WW2 thing aboard the USS Portland, a heavy cruiser in the South Pacific. He returned, GED'd his high school, and set forth boldly. I never saw Bill depressed, maybe anxious, but never down. He never thought he should be treated differently than anyone else. What is it that distinguishes us, each from the other? Today we celebrate Bill. He not only stood out separately, but he did it discreetly, without fanfare. Bill was extremely confident in other venues. One of the things that makes me think of Bill, every time I read on a menu or hear the words, French toast, how could he make a breakfast? Saying goodbye to a friend is pretty difficult. I think Bill would think it appropriate that I speak at his farewell celebration because we were friends. You'd also appreciate some mention of Robert's service. He encouraged the two granddaughters to memorize the cremation of Sam McGee, which they accomplished to his great satisfaction. One passage comes to mind in closing my remarks is from The Spell of the Yukon, which reminds me of Bill's efforts here in Alaska, talking about this great North Country and speaking of the land. Robert Service wrote, "Dreaming of men who will bless me, of women esteeming me good, of children born in my borders, of radiant motherhood, of cities leaping to stature, of fame like a flag unfurled as I pour the tide of my riches into the eager lap of the world." God bless you, Bill. Thank you.
Bill was elected mayor 3 times, and of course it was a particularly intense time for Juneau because of the pressure of the Capitol move. Another mayor who served multiple times is Bruce Botello, who will talk about Bill's leadership role as mayor.
Bill was a truly gifted mayor. I particularly admired how efficiently he ran assembly meetings, often with great wit, though he mostly attributed his success to his deputy, Harry Ossie, who would often, according to Bill, simply lean over and tell him what to do. Bill will always be remembered for his role in opposing the Capitol move, but his vision wasn't simply that Juneau was entitled to be the Capitol. He believed that it had to continually earn that right. Merrill outlined some of the efforts that he undertook in Juneau in that regard, the beautification, the placement of state flags, the redoing of South Franklin, the streets, the construction of Eagle Crest, and this hall, Centennial Hall, to name just a few of his legacies. Bill had many triumphs. But I want to recount in a little more detail one of his setbacks, which Merrill also referred to, and that was Bill's effort to have Juneau change time zones. Now, historically, time standards or standard times in Alaska were just not a big deal until the early 1900s. Generally, clocks were set according to longitude, thus clock would strike noon in Wrangell and then 12 minutes later in Sitka. And Congress imposed Alaska Standard Time, which was 2 hours behind Seattle in the 1920s. But in a great Alaskan tradition, most local governments largely ignored Congress and set their own times. Juneau, for example, its voters adopted Pacific Standard Time in 1940. Up until the 1960s, Congress continued to recognize only one time zone, Alaska Standard Time, while Alaskans used 4 time zones. And it wasn't until 1966 that Congress finally acknowledged the Alaska usage. In August of 1974, as most of you will recall, Alaska voters finally approved a capital move measure. And in November of 1978, they approved the Frank Initiative, simultaneously rejecting a proposed bond issue that would have financed the capital at Wasilla. Now, traveling during the Frank Initiative campaign all around the state, Bill repeatedly heard complaints about accessibility. With Juneau 2 hours ahead of Anchorage, there were effectively only 4 hours a day in which business and government hours between the two cities overlapped. Thus, 3 months after the vote, the capital move issue being fresh on his mind, Bill proposed to the Assembly that it petition the U.S. Secretary of Transportation to move northern Southeast Alaska from Pacific time to Yukon time, 1 hour to the west. Bill's hope was that the time zone shift would be seen as Juneau's attempt to be a more responsive capital city and would also be the first step in a movement which would lead to all Alaskans being in the same time zone. The Assembly unanimously adopted the resolution, and Secretary of Transportation Neil Goldschmidt approved the change effective on April 28, 1980, and all hell broke loose. A Save the Capital Time Committee, actually made up of several people who later went on to serve on the Assembly, was formed to reverse the decision. And their initiative petition drive successfully collected enough signatures to force a special city election in late March of 1980. The petition would bar the Assembly from ever advocating a change from the Pacific time zone, and would also direct the Assembly to reconsider or petition DOT to reconsider any decision moving Juneau outside that zone. Now, in the meantime, Bill had persuaded Anchorage Mayor George Sullivan of the wisdom of the idea, and Sullivan announced his intent to put the question of shifting Anchorage 1 hour to the east to his own voters. Nevertheless, when it came time for the vote, the initiative passed 2-1, and the Assembly immediately advised the Department of Transportation of the outcome of the election. But there were many who didn't think that the Assembly had gone far enough, and a recall effort was launched against Bill and four other Assembly members, leading to a second special election in 1980. It was the highest turnout of any election before or since in Juneau. And the Empire's lead sentence the following day, I think, says it all. What started out as a cliffhanger when results began trickling in Tuesday night finished as a vote of confidence for Mayor Bill Overstreet. Now, Secretary of Transportation Neil Goldschmidt rescinded the time zone change in late September 1980. It may well be, as one looks back at it, that a majority of the voters did not see the wisdom of Bill's efforts to change time zones then, or its importance to Juneau. But they did recognize his tremendous service to Juneau when they overwhelmingly retained him in office. The rest of the story, I think you know, and it's a particular pleasure to have Governor Sheffield here, because 2 years later, Governor Sheffield urged the legislature to support a consolidated time zone to Juneau, moving Juneau and Anchorage each 1 hour towards each other, as Bill Overstreet had envisioned. And on September 15th, 1983, the Federal Department of Transportation agreed. The last 30 years have been the longest in our state and territorial history without a controversy over time. William Shakespeare wrote, "Time is the justice that examines all offenders." In this instance, Bill has acquitted himself well.
Please sit in silent contemplation while J. Allen McKinnon plays the Navy hymn, a song of particular importance to Bill. Bill Corbis will talk about Bayer Bill's Navy career and the Capitol move. The two of them often got together for a glass of wine to compare their Navy days, and we remain so very grateful for the effective work of both Bills on Capitol move issues and votes from 1976 to 1982. Bill?
Well, hearing the Navy hymn is an appropriate entree into Mayor Bill's Navy career. Bill enlisted in the Navy on November 13, 1942, the day that the USS Juno was sunk. He was assigned to the heavy cruiser Portland, that's Portland, Maine. And his job was he was a 20-millimeter gunner. He was a three-man anti-aircraft crew. He started at the bottom of the ladder. I believe he was a loader. And ultimately, by the time the war was up, he was doing the aiming and shooting. Bill experienced all facets of Navy warfare. He was involved in shore bombardment, various invasions. He was involved in ship-to-ship battles. And finally, he was involved in anti-aircraft work with his 20-millimeter mount. He participated in the Kiska operation, the landings at Eniwetok and Tarawa, New Hollandia in New Guinea. He also was part of the Battle of Surigao Straits in the Philippines, which was really part of a series of battles which really finished the Japanese fleet as a effective force in World War II. His experience in the Navy served him well when he was mayor, and Juno celebrated their 100th anniversary, and he invited several of the survivors of the USS Juno to come to Juno and describe their experiences. Bill could relate to them well, and did a very good job of making him feel part of the community. As Jim Clark mentioned, in recent years, Jim and Bill and I used to go over to his house every Thursday night at 5 o'clock, and over a glass of wine, we reviewed World War II many, many times, refought it, and had many fond memories. Turning to the lighter side of things, Hugh Grant maintains that Bill Overstreet cruised the Pacific for 3 years at U.S. government expense. Anyhow, he came out of the Navy in 1946 as a fighter, and that served him well for the capital move years. So if you'll fast forward with me to 1974, when Bill was on the assembly and we had just lost the capital move fight. It was a grim scene. Just the same, he decided to run for mayor in 1976 in order to do something about the capital move that we were fighting. He inherited a difficult situation. We had a capital move on the books. It was the law of the land. We had a community that was divided. We had just had the ad hoc overthrow of the established Democratic Party. So there were young people and old people and experienced people such as Felix Toner and Clarence Jacobson, the old guard, and they weren't speaking to the young people. The community was divided. There was no strategy as to where we go from here. And finally, we had Mr. Robert Atwood, who was the publisher of the Anchorage Times, who incessantly was beating the drums to move the Capitol. So Bill was elected mayor, and he had four roles to play as he saw it. Number one was to be the figurehead and the voice of Juneau around the state of Alaska. Number two was to bring the community back together so that we could move forward together on a united basis. Number three, he ensured that the assembly gave all the necessary support to those that are trying to oppose the capital move. And fourth, he represented Juneau in dealing with the delegation. Our legislative delegation. He accomplished much. He brought the community together, young people and old people, people from differing interest groups, and created a coherent organization headed up by the Alaska Committee. He was part of the effort to establish a strategy and tactics to reverse the capital move vote. And I'm happy to say that he was the leader in this whole process. Bill had many fine traits that served him well during the capital move site. He was an incessant campaigner. He crisscrossed the states many, many times, appearing before any organization that would hear him listen, that wanted to hear him talk. He was articulate. He was glib. He always had an answer just at the tip of his tongue if asked a question by a reporter or anybody for that matter. He was an excellent debater. I would like to recite to you one time that he and Jim Clark appeared before the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and they were opposed on the other side of the debate by Robert Atwood and Senator Jan Fakes. Mr. Atwood made the point, now, why would a farmer build his barn 800 yards from the house, from his house? And of course, what he was getting at is, why would Alaska have a capital 800 miles from the population center, which was Anchorage. And Bill replied, "Mr. Atwood, it's not your barn." And this brought the house down. And Bill and Jim were carried the day on that debate. And as you all know, in 1982, a vote was held, and the capital move law was repealed. So we owe a great deal to Bill Overstreet just on the capital move alone. In closing, we're very fortunate to have Bill, a loving husband, a loving father, friends to many of us, Navy seaman, gunner, and last of all, Mayor Bill Overstreet during the Capitol move. Thank you.
That same debate that Bill refers to, Atwood, at the very beginning, said, "I wonder how it feels to be the mayor of the avalanche capital of the world." And he said, "That's quite a question here in Earthquake City." Bill's last campaign was to raise the money to place a Skip Wallen sculpture of a humpback whale breaching from an infinity pool on Juneau's waterfront. Lorraine Durr has worked with him on this project every step of the way. Lorraine?
Thank you, Jim. Gene asked me to speak at Bill's service, and I said, "Gene, I've never been able to do this very well because I get too emotional and then I can't say what I really mean." She said, "Well, don't think about Bill. Just think about the whale and what it meant to Bill." When in 2007, Bill called and said he wanted to bring Skip out and talk to Romer and me about the whale, I told Romer, "Skip Wallen and Bill Overstreet want to come talk to us about helping in an effort to raise funds for a 50th statehood anniversary project." Romer was on the 50th anniversary committee and knowing and supporting the various and sundry things in which I've been involved, Romer said, and I quote, expletive deleted, "You aren't going to get me involved in some kind of an art project now, are you?" Well, I assured him I had never yet gotten involved in any kind of an art project, but I didn't know what was being proposed. He said, "If Skip Wallen is involved, you know it's some kind of an art project." Well, I have never been an art person. As I grew up on an itinerant farmer's daughter in Nebraska, art to me was paint by numbers, and I had never been interested a whole lot beyond that. Romer said, "Well, I've always appreciated Skip Wallen's ability. Let's see what's being proposed." Well, let's just say that started us down this road. So Romer was a Skip Wallen fan, and I was a Bill Overstreet fan. I had been on the school board in Sitka in the late 70s before I moved here, so knew Bill through the School Board Association and his directorship there. I appreciated his wit and his ability to take a situation and see the humor in any of it. So between the two of them, they convinced us that a project presented to the state of Alaska in honor of 50 years of statehood from the people of Alaska was a worthy project in which to be involved. And we signed on to help make the Whale Project a reality. Now, when I say the Whale Project, there is a whole vision that stands behind that project. Is there anyone in this room today who cannot say that Alaska has been good to them? I came to Alaska in 1967 for a couple years for adventure. I said to my then husband, "Let's just go see what it's like, and then we can come home, and I won't bug you anymore about being adventurous." Well, how many years ago? Maybe 46. But in that 46 years, I have had various careers, lived in various communities throughout Alaska, had babies and raised them, had three husbands and raised them, but only because I lived in and loved this great state did I achieve the things that I've done. When I saw the Whale Project proposal and we talked about it, I realized that this great statue would really signify what Alaska is to me and to all of us. An animal of grandeur rising from the depths of wherever, showing its magnificence, power, personifying the spirit of Alaska. Pull yourself together. Rise from the depths. Leap to new heights and be what you will be. So it was with that gut feeling that I agreed to fundraise for the Whale Project. And as Bill and I talked about the project, we wanted it to be a project from the people of Alaska, those of us to whom Alaska has been so good, not from government, although they could find a place to put the statue, but a gift from the people of Alaska to the state of Alaska. Bill was passionate about the Whale Project. When we lagged, he was encouraging. When we faltered, he led. And when we were lazy with our tasks, he chided and cajoled. But he never stopped believing that the whale would someday be the centerpiece of Juneau's waterfront. As we looked for places for the whale to rise from, he would say, "Just envision that whale rising there, the mist surrounding it, and thinking about its majesty." He maintained that vision from the early 90s when he and Skip first talked about it to the last days of his life. Those of us on the Whale Project Board of Directors now carry forward that vision that within 15 months, the whale will be as tall as this room is tall, will be delivered to Juneau, ready to be the centerpiece on the waterfront as a gift from the people of Alaska to honor the 50th anniversary of statehood for Alaska. We thank the state of Alaska for giving us the place to come to be ourselves, to be able to grow, expand, live, and die. We thank Bill Overstreet for the vision of the Whale Project. And we thank those of you who have supported that vision. With the recent grant from the Rasmussen Foundation and your help, the whale will rise. Just as the Space Needle adorns the covers of Seattle brochures and the Little Mermaid adorns Copenhagen literature and the Sydney Opera House entices people to Australia, years from now, we will have to pause and thank Bill Overstreet for the vision and Skip Wallen for the work that puts the whale on the front of books in Juneau, travel brochures, and enticements to visit Alaska, and the whale on the waterfront. Rest in peace, Bill, and know the whale will rise.
And now Bill Jr. will tell us about Bill as a dad.
Many of you knew Bill Overstreet as a school teacher, principal, assemblyman, mayor, trade representative, or deputy chief of staff to Governor Hickel, or maybe just as that old retired guy who liked to play golf. He was all those things, but before that, he was my dad. He was a man who had an only child and was therefore somewhat overprotective, a man who was cautious by nature, with a son who enjoyed risk experience activities, as evidenced by the two broken arms, one broken leg, and half a dozen concussions I had in my youth. He was a man who was a professional educator, who had a son who was smart enough, but who often only worked hard enough to get a passing grade. When I had trouble with math, he would spend evenings drilling me on my times tables after I had done my regular homework. I hated that. Today, when I see young people working in fast food restaurants who can't make change when the power goes out, I smile to myself and thank my dad that I'm not like that. He taught me to tie a bowline, a clove hitch, and a figure eight knot. These are skills which I use in my trade to this day. He taught me to think for myself, to be responsible for my own actions, and to admit when I made a mistake. He took me duck hunting. He taught me to set crab pots and to fish. He instilled in me a love of reading. He would bring publishers' catalogs home from school and say that I could order any books that caught my fancy. I just had to promise to read them all. Dad was pretty strict with me. It seemed like there were a lot of things my friends could do that I was not allowed. And saying Mark's dad or Rodney's dad lets them do it didn't make any difference. But when I really messed up, he was pretty forgiving. For example, the time all the neighborhood kids were racing bicycles down Highland Drive. We lived at the intersection of Barron's Avenue and Highland Drive. The lower story of that house had a single-car garage at the time. My bicycle had coaster brakes, but I'd broken the chain, so at the time it had no brakes. I thought I would have to be the fastest one down the hill because I had no way to slow down. So off I went. I came down the hill pretty darn fast, and somehow I managed to make the turn not only into Barron's Avenue, but into the driveway of our house. I don't know how fast I was going when I hit the garage door, but it split the garage door top to bottom and snapped the front forks and wheel right off my bike. I was left standing with my nose against the garage door holding the handlebars. When Dad came home, he looked at the bike and he looked at the garage door, and all he ever said was, "Are all you all right? Are you all right?" And I said, "Yes, I was," and that was the end of it. I was young for my grade and small for my age, but Dad taught me to be self-reliant. One time, as I was on my way home from school, a kid that I did not know well stopped me and said, "Aren't you Bill Overstreet, the principal's son?" And I said, "Yes, I was." He said, "Your dad spanked me today, so I'm going to give you a whipping." Well, I figured he couldn't whip me if he couldn't catch me, so I was off like a rocket. Taking a circuitous route, I got home safely, and when Dad got home, I complained to him most bitterly. He then gave me a piece of advice that I'm sure was difficult for him, but which I believe was the best thing he could have said in the circumstance. He said, "Son, you're just going to have to figure this one out for yourself." Now, I don't know whether that kid thought better of the whipping thing or if he just enjoyed the satisfaction of seeing me take off like a jackrabbit, but that was the end of that story. Dad had a great sense of humor, and he taught me to have an appreciation for the ironies of life. Wayne Johnson, who owns City Dry Cleaners, which used to be located about where the Red Dog is now, was Dad's cousin. He was about 17 years older than Dad and taught Dad a lot about fishing and boating in the area. I remember Dad telling me about the time that he and Wayne took their boats into Ford's Terror. Dad said it had gotten really late and it was getting dark, and that was about as scared as he had ever been when boating, but he had confidence in Wayne, so he just stayed right on the tail of Wayne's boat and everything turned out fine. Many years later, I asked Wayne if he remembered that trip. He laughed and said he was scared too, but Dad was so close behind that he didn't have room to turn the boat around to get out of there. One of my favorite memories of Dad was when my family and I went to Tokyo to visit when he and Mom were living there. My daughters were about 2 and 5 at the time. And he said, "I want to take you to a park for kids. It's just a couple of blocks away." On the way there, he explained that we could never have a place like this in the States as the lawyers would have a field day with it. When I got there, I found that the centerpiece of the playground was a pyramid about 15 feet tall. Each side was surfaced differently. One side was smooth, and one side had rounded rocks embedded in it as handholds, and one side had pipe handholds. And I don't remember what the fourth side was, but you kind of get the idea. In about 2 shakes, my kids were all over that thing like little monkeys. After about 3 minutes, my dad looked pretty pale and said, "I can't watch this. I've got to go." And he went home. I had gone off to college by the time that my dad entered politics. I've seen videotapes of some of the speeches he made on the Capitol move, but I remember as a young boy when he was going to have to speak before a group, he would sit me down and practice reading his speech to me. I remember him being so nervous that his hands would shake so badly that he couldn't read his own writing. I guess he got over it. In 1966, my dad and mom put me on an airplane and sent me off to Boston University, which at the time had a student population 3 times the size of Juneau. Many years later, he told me that one of his friends had given him a hard time about sending me off alone like that. They thought he should have taken me there and seen to it that I was settled in and was going to be all right. He asked me what I thought and how I had felt about it at the time. I told him, like any teenager, I was happy to be out on my own without somebody looking over my shoulder all the time and telling me what to do. The last thing in the world I would have wanted was for my parents to be holding my hand and taking me to a new school. He expected me to have no trouble adjusting to my new environment, and therefore I expected to have no trouble, and I had none. All through my youth, Dad always said he wanted to be buried at sea. He said the Navy owed that to him, and I was to see to it. In 1975, the movie Jaws was released. After that, he decided on cremation. Last summer, in the course of a long conversation with Dad, I told him that I believed that I had the most idyllic childhood of anyone I know. I'm so glad that I was able to tell him that while he was well enough to understand it. Thank you.
I'm sure that there are many of you in the audience who have a story about Bill that they'd like to share with Gene and Bill's family. Our videographer, Gabe Strong, would be happy to tape any remarks about Bill you may have for his family during the reception. And Gabe will be right outside the exit door on the left in front of the monument that points out that Bill Overstreet was the mayor of the assembly when Centennial Hall was built. But the family would certainly appreciate that. Steve Hamilton will now sing the Lord's Prayer. John Pugh will give the benediction.
First, thank you, Gene, for asking me to do this. As I thought about and reflected on Bill's life, there was something that kept hitting me, and it really came to really with me today, particularly, and that I've been trying to teach students at the university about a theory that's probably 10, 15 years old, but it's called servant leadership, that leadership isn't about telling other people what to do. Leadership is really being about a servant and how you go about doing that. And Bill's life and his achievements certainly represent that. So my closing prayer is going to include one of what I consider to be the most important example of servant leadership of our Savior Jesus. Oh God, we thank you for your presence with us today as we celebrate the life of Bill Overstreet. He truly was an individual who followed Christ's message to the apostles as he washed their feet. And I quote from John chapter 13, verses 13 to 17. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, No servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Bill Overstreet was your humble servant doing your work in this world. Today we ask that you give your servant rest with your saints for life everlasting. We also ask that you bless his family and that you bless all who are in attendance today. Amen.
As we close, two things. There is a copy for you at the exit of two beautifully written stories about Bill by Melissa Griffiths from last fall's Juno Empire. I also commend to you reading Bill's very entertaining book, An Okie's Life in the Alaskan Rainforest, which I'm sure you can find at the library. It contains all kinds of wonderful stories about Juno over the years, and it's written in with Bill's very sharp wit, and it's very, very entertaining. Bill had a favorite closing that would accompany most of the time. Bill Corbus and I would have wine with him, and often at dinners that we would go to together. He loved to tell the story about General MacArthur's ending comment after the instrument of surrender had been signed by Japan on the battleship Missouri on September 2nd, 1945. These proceedings are closed. As for our closing, may Bill now be in a place where there are no capital moves, no time zone votes, and there are breaching humpback whales all around. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Gene has asked you to please stay for refreshments and to visit with Gene and the Overstreet family. And Gene and the Overstreet family are going to be right down there on the right to greet all of you and say hello. And thank you again so much for coming today.
Thank you.